I'm Helen Marshall, and this is the Diary of a CLO. I hope no one's listening, but if you are, definitely share it. In this episode, I'm joined by Adam Horn, co-founder of OpenOrg and PeopleMetrics. Adam is pushing for more open and transparent working, particularly across people teams in the startup space. As a new dad for the third time and a business founded by trade, Adam is no stranger to hard work and graft, but he also knows how important it is to get people stuff right in order to impact business performance. We chat about all of this and more. Enjoy. Adam, hi, and welcome to Diary of a CLO. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Yeah, awesome. It's been a really busy few weeks for us at OpenOrg. Lots going on. Still settling into life as a third-time dad as well. So, but yeah, can't complain. All good.
You've definitely got your hands full, and I'm sure we'll dig into all of that throughout the conversation. And I'm really looking forward to hearing about you and your journey towards more people-centric and transparent workplace cultures. But before we do that, can you tell me a bit about yourself and your journey towards founding OpenOrg and now PeopleMetrics as well?
Yeah, sure. At a high level, I've been in the people and talent space for about 12, 13 years now. 9 of those years working as a founder or co-founder of my own companies as well. So interesting mix of working quite hands-on with tech startups and scale-ups, mostly on their own hiring as an advisor and consultant, etc. A lot of that time embedded in their companies, but also building my own teams in the background and trying to juggle the two. So along the way, I've had a really nice level of exposure, I suppose, to how other companies hire, and I've fed that into how I've built my own companies as well. And over that time, without realizing I was going to launch OpenOrg one day, I've had a very sort of clear view of what transparency looks like in different companies. I've worked with some companies who I would describe as incredibly open, high levels of trust, great communication, great access to information. As a recruiter, when you're working in those businesses, your life couldn't be easier. You've got these public resources and handbooks that you can share with people, build trust, makes people more informed, and those people who join those organizations thrive and stay a lot longer. Always a dream working with those types of companies. And there was genuine business benefit to having those things in place too. But I've also, on the flip side, worked with some companies who have been not intentionally vague, but they have been vague and they have been sort of secretive. And, you know, situations where you're parachuted into companies, for example, where you ask someone what funding round they've just done and you get 3 different answers. And then you get told by a CMO that we can't talk about funding round with candidates. So please just, if someone asks you, don't say anything. That sort of situation that puts you in a really, really tough sort of space, and you can hire people, but you see how hard it is, and you see how many people end up leaving very early on from that business. So very, very clear view for a long time. I've fed what I believe to be the right way of building the business into how I've built my own companies previously, and they've typically been bootstrapped anywhere from 6 employees to 75 plus employees. And it's worked. It worked very well. I've taken on a very transparent, mostly transparent mindset to doing that, and that's thrived. I exited my last company at the end of 2022. Didn't actually plan on founding another business at first. I was quite excited to actually go and work for someone for the first time in, you know, 12 years. So I became a candidate for the first time in a very long time. And that's when the transparency thing sort of slapped me in the face again. I've become very comfortable in my last business and very like transparency was the default and you take it for granted. But going back into this world as a candidate and seeing the job ads, the career sites, the interviews, etc., big slap in the face for me basically, and brought it all back to me. So got chatting to an old friend of mine, John, who I've known for 12 years, really good friends. He's got similar experiences at work when it comes to culture and transparency and the damage that that can do. Long story short, after some conversations between us and some lengthy conversations with lots of people out there, OpenOrg became a thing. And for us, that was a product of conversations that ultimately revealed to us that lots of people believe deeply in building more transparent companies, but transparency didn't feel tangible to them. They didn't have that roadmap, that framework that they could follow to go from A to B. They didn't feel like they had the people and the support around them to enable that to happen as well, and the resources. So that was our challenge, really. And that, I feel like that's what we have made a good start on with OpenOrg. We're in a good place where we are. We're catering as best as we possibly can to help people make that step towards more transparent businesses.
Yeah, and doing great work as well. There's a couple of things based on what you've said that I'd like to dig into. The first of which is around trust, and that trust and transparency seems to be twofold first of all, you as an external person to a business looking from the outside in, thinking, is this ambiguous or do I really know what's going on here? But then also that trust and transparency internally in how you operate and how you do business. So there seems to be kind of two sides of the picture there. And then thirdly, another area you can dig into is this idea of tangible transparency and what that actually means and looks like for businesses. Is there supposed to be a level of commonality between that external experience and what's going on inside? Is that ultimately where you want that harmony to be?
Yeah, and we use that word alignment a lot. I think it's always important to point out, if you had to dive into one and really focus on one, internal transparency probably is the important thing to really nail. That is super important, because without that, you're going to really, really struggle. And without the internal transparency, you can't really be externally transparent anyway, because you're probably going to be shocking a lot of people in your business. So getting the internal transparency there in the first place is great. And actually, a lot of companies that we speak to, when we first speak to them, feel fairly happy with their levels of transparency. They say, yeah, we're very transparent. We share this, we do this. Our job really is to try and talk to them about the benefits of just turning on some of the external transparency there, flicking that switch and sharing some things, because it's all very well knowing deep down that you're internally transparent and that you're doing a good job, but candidates and applicants outside don't know that. They can't see that. They're trusting your word, and people have different views of what transparency means. So it's not enough to just say we're transparent. Some people will take that to mean that you probably share salaries and bonuses, et cetera, internally. Others might take it to mean, okay, well, they've got very clear progression paths in their business, and it means very, very different things. So the work we do with companies is not just to get them in a good place internally, as far as communication and documentation and how information is shared is handled, but also aligning as much of that as possible to mirroring it externally, so that candidates and applicants have a really good opportunity to understand, what does this actually look like in this business, and is this the right place for me? And without that alignment of both of them, your hiring and your retention won't be at sort of harmony, if that makes sense.
So is there a certain level of transparency that you aim to help people you work with push towards, or does it really kind of vary, like you say, from customer to customer in terms of what that transparency means for the organization? Or are you trying to push them towards this broader definition, or that's a bit more all-encompassing?
We try and give people that sort of option to almost pick and choose the areas that work for them as a business. And it's not to say like they're not able to game it. We still sort of have a minimum threshold and level of transparency broadly we'd expect companies to meet, particularly if they are going down the route of becoming like a certified open org. We offer a certification around that to show and act as a proof point to trust and transparency as a business. But other than that, really, we encourage companies to really think carefully about, when they're defining what transparency means for their business, think carefully about, how does transparency fit into our business model, our values, our culture? We don't want transparency to become a PR exercise where people are overly transparent just for the sake of it to try and boost employer brand. Frankly, that will cause problems long term. Pick something that's healthy and appropriate for you, your industry, the space you're in. There's companies that are in very confidential, highly competitive spaces, and they simply have certain information they just cannot share because it will be risking them from a competitive point of view and, frankly, risking their business. That's fine. You understand that. But it's about picking and choosing the areas that are going to be healthy and appropriate to you, and then doubling down on what you can share and leaning into that as best as you can. And then providing clarity on the things that you can't share. It's okay for businesses not to share certain things, and I think they don't necessarily accept that. It's okay. But give clarity on what you can't share and why. And mostly, employees and applicants will nod their head and understand, that's fine, that makes sense. But without that clarity and that intentional sort of talking around that topic, people will just think, okay, well, they'll take it for granted that there is progression in place, or there is this in place. And yeah, that's what we try and do is whilst we do try and level up transparency and make sure there's a healthy and appropriate level there, we don't necessarily try and get people to prescribe to a certain formula for what that looks like, if that makes sense.
And I mean, I can sit here and nod my head because I really believe in what you're pushing towards and that idea of transparency. I understand the impact that building that level of trust in what you do and its impact on an organization and its performance, it makes sense to me. Do you find yourself working with organizations who aren't really as bought into it and you're trying to bring them along on that journey? Or do you end up working with people who are already like, I know what this means and I get what we're aiming for? Where does it tend to fall for you?
I'd say 99.9% of every people person, anyone in people and HR, talent, L&D, gets it. They believe in it. You know, that they don't need selling on OpenOrg. They're, you know, fans and want to get involved and et cetera. they don't necessarily know exactly how they can do it. And that's why they come to us, is like, I want to do it. I believe in it. And I believe in the benefits. I need help doing it. That's the one piece of the puzzle that actually has been relatively easy to slot into place, frankly. The harder part is the wider exec team. Sometimes there's a people person on that exec team. Sometimes there's not. Even if there is, sometimes they're there for the wrong reasons and they don't genuinely have that seat at the table, I found. But either way, they then take OpenOrg or some sort of business case for being more open, more transparent to a CEO or a CFO, and the shutters come down. And that's where the education piece it needs to come in, and maybe the reframing and the rethinking of what is transparency and what are we actually asking to do here. Lots of exec teams shut down at that point, which is, that's our challenge at the moment, is getting leadership teams to really appreciate the link between being more open and communicating and documenting more, and it's simple things really, and trust, because there's a real problem with trust out there at the moment. And there's some very, very straightforward things you can do to fix that.
And it sounds like there's almost a need for, and this probably comes back to what you spoke about right at the beginning, in terms of that tangible transparency. So what impact is this going to have on my business bottom line, essentially? And that's when you start to open up the conversation with a CFO or a CEO about how doing something with a company like OpenOrg can really benefit the organization from a financial perspective in terms of productivity and performance. So are you equipping people teams with the right kind of stakeholder management skills almost in order to have that conversation? And are you finding that the impact that you're already having with some of your customers needs to be made even bigger and put into focus even more at the moment?
Yeah. So on the first point around equipping people teams, we do find that tends to be something that we zone in on quite heavily. We have sort of two parts to the business broadly. We've got our company accreditation, which is something we work with companies on when there's total buy-in from leadership team and management team around wanting to publicly show people that we do believe we're transparent. We want to be held accountable to that. And we want to show the world that we care deeply about building trust. And we want to show people that we've genuinely got a proof point for trust in this business. That's one side of what we do. But that's rare at the moment. And it's a slow burn because there's not many companies out there who, despite saying that they're transparent and open, they're not able to prove it or not prepared to prove it. We were working on that. The other side of the coin in terms of the areas of our business is our L&D program. So we run cohorts and boot camps where we bring people and talent folks together for 4 or 8 weeks. You know, and we're building a community around this long term as well. And a lot of the conversations we have in these cohorts, these boot camps, end up turning to some form of like, how do we influence leadership? I've got a narcissistic CEO who won't listen, who's, you know, causing real problems. How do I sell this? How do I get them on board? So lots and lots of problems that come up around how people can influence and, you know, deal with exec teams.
It's interesting as well that you mentioned that community that you're building too. So you're bringing people teams together from across a broad range of sectors, businesses, and ways of working, and creating that sense of shared commonality and in what people are pushing towards. How has it been running that kind of that community aspect, and how much benefit have you seen from bringing people together in those situations?
It's been so much fun, honestly. It's definitely been the busiest side of our business so far, which we sort of knew would be the case. We knew that the, you know, accreditation would be a slower burn. We've designed it intentionally to be quite a long process, and we only launched 7 months ago. We're finding on average it's taking companies 2 to 6 months to get accredited. So, you know, we've got a handful so far and a larger handful going through that process now, which is great. But the cohorts and the boot camps were an immediate launch pad for us when we started talking about OpenOrg on LinkedIn. And we were blown away, honestly, with two co-founders down in the southwest of the UK thinking, okay, well, let's focus on UK startups for the time being and see if we can gain some traction there. And this just blew up. This was amazing. Like, we started getting people from Europe message us saying, can we chat? Can we join in? And we started getting a lot of people from the US messaging. And before we knew it, we were launching US cohorts because we had so much demand there. And we've had people in APAC messaging and applying to cohorts. And we can't go that far yet. We need to sleep at some point. But the global desire to be part of something and believe in building something that's more open, more trusted, more transparent has genuinely blown us away. What we're trying to do now with community is work out how we can best expand it and get people included, because that when we talk about community, what we effectively had at the start was a Slack group. People only joined if they did one of our programs. And we wanted to effectively have that there really to start building an alumni group of folks who had done our programs, who believed in this, and we could really sort of build this around. And that worked really, really well. But we spoke to so many people all over the world who couldn't access our cohorts or our programs because of time zone or because of funding or whatever that might be. Frankly, we sort of felt like we weren't making the most of that support and we weren't helping people in the right way. Even though we've got a heap of free resources we can direct people to, we wanted to find ways to make this as accessible to people as possible. So we've actually recently decided to open up our community on a wider basis. We're going to cap it at 500 members. We want to keep it intentionally small, highly engaged, but really attract people who genuinely care deeply about being part of something that is trying to build a more open future of work rather than just joining another Slack community that you're possibly never going to engage with. That's another new phase of our evolution.
Yeah, and building community is obviously something that I feel really passionate about. And it's interesting that you are switching to that more open and inclusive way of bringing people together, particularly at a time when, you know, people really need that support. Budgets are being cut, resources are stretched. And there's almost that level of, well, how can we do this together? And well, what are you doing that I might be able to learn from? And you'll see huge benefits, I imagine, in the conversations that happen as part of that community that you'll be able to leverage to create more specific, more, I don't know, the next level of a product as a result of what's going on in those communities, which is really interesting. Have you noticed, in, you're saying you obviously started off with that kind of UK specific lens, and then you, people from Europe, people from the US, and potentially APAC eventually as well, will be part of the conversation. Have you noticed particular cultural nuances around what people are looking for in terms of support? Or is it global, we just want to be more transparent?
I do find, I mean, there's some definite sort of commonalities there. We talked about like influencing leadership earlier. You'd speak to pretty much any people person and you mentioned like trying to influence a leader and you normally get a wry smile from them over camera. So there's always some common problems there around how you can manage upwards with CEOs, etc. There's some nuanced challenges people have top of mind at the moment, particularly in the US. The pay transparency laws that are really starting to grow around the entire country are forcing this to be a top of mind challenge for people leaders to face and deal with and get on top of, and slightly behind, but coming along the way as well, is the EU pay transparency directive as well. So that's 2026. Companies, some of them are doing the right thing and getting on top of it now. Some of them are probably going to sit tight for another year or so, who knows. But there are challenges legally that are driving certain things for people. In the UK, not so much the case, but generally speaking, we tend to see that there's very similar problems. And that, in a strange way, is encouraging in the sense that that word transparency can be very sort of scary to a lot of exec teams, but what this always tends to come back to is 9 times out of 10 is we've got an engagement problem at work. Everyone's got an engagement problem at work. People don't seem happy. They're not engaged. They don't feel listened to. They don't feel communicated to. So it's about communication. And we tend to see that very small companies tend to do a relatively good job at this. And that's straightforward because CEO is very visible, part of the team, you know, there and thereabouts. But when you start growing and scaling and getting bigger, you start creating silos naturally in the business. Communication becomes trickier and information automatically, without even thinking about it, gets hidden behind doors and less public, and team members start to feel less included, less involved. And that scaling and that hyper growth and that point at which companies grow is when people start to feel less engaged. And we're trying to work with companies at that sort of size and that sort of scale to help them get the right things in place to safeguard that. And I've seen that in my own company previously. We went from 2 of us to 75 very, very quickly in the space of about 18 months. And overall, I think we did an okay job, but with hindsight, there's so many things that if I did it again now, I'd do very differently, that we put in place or did that probably wasn't the most ideal thing to do from a communication perspective.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, right? You know, it's always good to be able to look back and think, oh, I would have done that differently. And that shows that you've obviously grown and you've got that experience and you know what you would do differently next time. I think it's really interesting, that kind of moment from startup to scale up. What size team are you normally kind of, would you like to come in at? What point in a business would you say, we would really like to come and help you right now because you need to start thinking about this now before it becomes a bigger problem?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always worked in the startup scale up space, so it's my world. I'm not a corporate person. My co-founder John is, so we've got a nice sort of blend there, to be honest. But I love working with the tiny companies. So when I say that, you know, typically the sort of companies that we tend to attract and work with could be anywhere from 20 employees up to 500, that sort of size. And it's not to say we couldn't work with or wouldn't work with someone bigger, but it tends to be the types of companies that come to us. So they are those sorts of companies that are in that stage of, we've got a handful of employees, we're starting to really grow now, and we want to be intentional with what we do, how we do it, and that's amazing. Or there are bigger companies that are post Series B, going on towards Series C, and everything's frankly falling apart and they need to find a way of fixing this and they just can't put their finger on what's going wrong. So the ideal for us, honestly, would be probably to come in around that sort of 10 to 20 size, maybe a little bit bigger. Start working with companies on what you could put in place now. But the issue is lots of companies put things like that on the back burner because at the size that they're at when they're sort of 10, 20 employees, there are no problems. Everything feels great. So they're like, we don't have communication problems. We all talk all the time. We speak, everything's perfect. But that's the moment you need to start thinking about what happens next. Don't wait for it to break before you try and fix it because you've started to lose trust. You've started to lose engagement and you've not planned ahead. So it's, probably around the sort of 20 person mark, I would say.
It's hard, isn't it? Because when you're in that kind of startup environment, it's very scrappy. It's very fast paced. It's like everyone's pulling their weight in multiple different directions. And it's almost like, who is going to stop to think about this sort of stuff when it's not necessarily having an impact right now on the business bottom line? And you need someone who's quite forward thinking in order to know, like, this is, we need to bring someone in to help us to do this in order to preserve that going forward, until, because it will eventually have that impact on the bottom line. So yeah, really interesting, I imagine, to have that conversation with founders and of those type of businesses.
I was a little bit possibly too bullish on this the other day when I had a conversation with someone, but someone said those sort of words to me actually, and sort of saying that, I'm part of a scrappy 8 to 10 person team. You know, I'd love to build a public handbook, but you know, it's not going to happen. There's so many. And I sort of was a bit bullish, but I said, I managed to do it. And I'm not saying like I'm special, but it was a priority for me to say, we need this in place. This is crucial to our company. Just as crucial as picking up customers. We need to have this in place. I will find the time to build it. And for me, that time happened to be like 3, 4 a.m. because I had a newborn and I was under an extractor fan and typing away on Notion on my mobile. But like, if it's important to you, genuinely, you will do it. And if it's not, it will always get pushed back. There's a fine line there for me between genuinely being stretched and under-resourced and busy, but also it genuinely not being a priority and it becoming an excuse. So it is a fine line, but I get it, it's tricky, but you can find the time.
Yeah, it's a really interesting perspective, isn't it? And you kind of always got a choice, right, to either do something or not. And it's where you see a priority at that particular moment in time, for sure. Just to bring generations into this conversation a little bit, because I feel like when you're dealing with, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're dealing with startup to scale up businesses, you're probably going to be dealing with a certain generation in the workforce that are wanting to push for the right things. And I feel like millennials, and I know we don't really like labels, but millennials have been on that cusp of traditional ways of working and then also wanting to like think differently and push for different, and they're finding that balance and almost kind of paving the way for new generations to come in and just rip up the rule book, essentially. Are you seeing that with new generations coming into the workforce, that we almost need, there is an expectation that this is just the way business should be done? And are you finding that there's a generational divide in alignment, essentially?
Everyone's talking about it in different sort of bubbles and pockets at the moment, aren't they? I think for everything that I read and have seen as well, suggests to me that younger generations coming into work are more demanding. And it doesn't mean to say that older generations don't care about transparency and trust, but things are changing. You know, trust used to be applied and assumed between an employer and employee. You know, I think going back many years, people used to go and stay at companies for 10, 15, 20 years. There was this loyalty and trust that was just assumed from day one. Employers didn't need to earn it from employees. It was just like, hey, I'm giving you a job. You can stay here and have a great career and all that sort of stuff. And that's just how work used to seemingly happen. That was before my time. So I'm sort of anecdotal here. But millennials, which is definitely where I sort of fit in, there is this sort of still this work ethic there when I first came into work as a graduate of like, I need to get my head down, I need to impress, I need to work late nights. And I did that, like I did everything to impress my manager and try and get promoted. And I found myself setting up a company at 23 and like going down a completely different career path that wasn't really planned, but just happened. I didn't really follow that sort of corporate ladder, but I feel like I probably could have as a millennial and could still be there now, you know, 10 years later if I wanted to be. But having since set up businesses and hired people, my last company, we reached about 70 odd people, and mostly, you know, we had a varying, you know, age group there, but a lot of them were probably in their sort of early to mid 20s. So I've seen a lot of people coming into our business and what they ask for, expect, how they, you know, expect to be communicated with. It's very, very different. They're harder to manage. And I don't mean it in a bad way, but you have to work harder to understand what people want from their work, from their jobs, the flexibility, the ability to balance work and life and have different priorities and all that sort of stuff. But more transparency around when's my next promotion? How am I going to progress here? And also not expecting people to stay with you forever. As an employer, it's about trying to take a more refreshing mindset and approach to hiring, and sort of not try and hope that people are going to join you and stay with you forever and not be offended if they don't, but actually see this as an opportunity to build them up and move them on to something better afterwards. And that's your job, is to actually send them on to an even better job next.
You mentioned the idea of kind of promotion there as something that you wanted to get your head down, work hard, be promoted. And that's kind of maybe an older fashioned way of thinking about what work can be for you. And there's also a level of transparency needed in terms of, I'm coming into a business, I need to know how I'm going to progress and where I'm going to get to. And we've seen that lots of people are leaving jobs because they're not gaining the professional development opportunities that they want. There's almost a different way of talking and communicating about personal professional development, in that, what projects do you have access to? How are you utilizing your skills and stretching your skills and your thinking in ways that aren't necessarily being fulfilled with a promotion per se, but actually you're developing yourself, and that is increasing your level of engagement and maybe trust and investment in a business. Are you seeing any of that in the work that you're doing?
I previously saw a lot of desire, not from everyone, but from a good few people in my previous team, to get involved, to learn, to do different things. And maybe it's because we were very early stage as well, but we naturally hired some very good generalists who weren't super linear, who didn't want to just do one thing, and a few of them moved internally in our business a couple of times that time and excelled in every role that they did, which is amazing and really, really helpful when you're in that sort of phase and size business. So there definitely was this sort of as much thirst for knowledge and experience and exposure to learn new things without necessarily having to go up a ladder. But it's definitely not something that I would want to generalize to say that everyone in younger generations wants that as well. It's just different pathways. Some people really like that linear path, that very, very clear upwards progression in one role. And if that suits them, then amazing. There's probably the right type of business for you out there that you should go after. And it's probably in the more of the corporate world. But if so, amazing. There's still like lots of opportunity for people out there in different walks of life.
And you mentioned the idea of learning new skills and thinking about what that looks like for you in a particular role. I imagine you're learning a lot of new skills at the moment, being a new dad of three and also founding a second business alongside OpenOrg, People Metrics, at the same time. How has that been? What new skills have you been learning?
I feel like I've seen it all as a dad now. I've got three boys under six. So the third, I sleep a little bit less, and I wasn't really sleeping much anyway. But that's not been a huge, huge change, honestly. It's, you know, he's slotted in and just sort of getting on with it, which is amazing. But yeah, on the business front, have learned a heap. I learned so much from my last company. Again, the power of hindsight. You do things at a time, you learn as you go, try and change as you go. You still probably don't do things perfectly, but once you leave and look back, you realize how much you've learned afterwards that you want to then take forward. So there's been a heap of learning there in the last year or so. But I've learned loads setting up OpenOrg with my co-founder, John, as well. And one of the more recent things that I've learned is getting more hands-on with like building websites and so on and so forth. I'm the most untechy person in the world. But when I was 23 and set up my first company, you didn't have like low code, no code website builders and stuff like that. It was like real hardcore coding and stuff, which I couldn't do. So it took me about a year to build my first website, and using a lot of different people to help me. Now you can spin something up very, very quickly. And I've become very hands-on thanks to John and like his guidance around understanding more about how I can do these things. So I'm learning some basic like things like that, which is really fun, really awesome to get to grips with alongside launching stuff. And yeah, he effectively has built a platform now called People Metrics, which wasn't planned. We, as part of building OpenOrg, we've always built and curated lots of resources for the people world, and we share them on our website free and you know, free to access, etc. One of the things on our list that we had a lot of signal on for a long time was giving people the ability to not just look inwardly at their people metrics and understand where they are as a company, but look outwardly as well. How do our metrics compare to other similar companies? Because there's some context sometimes needed, like, okay, our CEO is saying our attrition is not great, but is it actually not great? We'd love to know how we're doing against other companies. And no one was really doing that. So honestly, the first idea there was to build a spreadsheet that we could just throw out there, very much in line with our other sort of resources we've built, get people to contribute, crowdsource, etc., see where it went. I went and had a baby at Christmas and came back, and John had sort of said, oops, I've got a bit carried away, and built an entire platform, which is amazing. And so that's been unexpected, another plate to spin, but has been amazing to see how it's blown up. So we threw it into beta in January, had 300 people, companies in the startup space apply and sign up to Beta. And we've been working with that group for six, seven weeks, which has been amazing. We've accelerated that product and taken it from like MVP to something we feel like we can launch. And we're launching it hopefully at the time of recording next week, very soon, to a paid wait list of another 150 plus odd users as well. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, if it takes off, it's an entirely different business as well. So we have to work out how we juggle two things.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, isn't it? That kind of benchmarking outside of your own organization and understanding whether what you're doing is really as good as you think it is, or whether, like you say, the CEO is saying that it's not great and actually it is compared to other organizations. And that level of clarity is definitely needed. And certainly with customers that we work with, our customers want to know what other customers are doing. And that kind of level of communication between people is really important to know that either you're not alone in the things that you're doing or the things that you're facing, or actually you're doing really well compared to other people. And it comes back to that sense of community that you've built as well, in terms of what people are leaning on each other for. And then also leans into that other side of being able to prove business impact and knowing what you're doing is effective, essentially. So it sounds great.
Yeah, one of the metrics we track is like promotion rate and things like that, to try and tie into like understanding a little bit about internal mobility. And let's say your, you know, internal promotion rate is 12% on its own internally as a business. Could mean anything. It could be good, it could be bad. You don't really know. You think it is what it is until you start understanding what market average is out there in similar companies. You won't understand necessarily whether that's actually genuinely good or bad. It could sound great, but if the average is actually 30%, there's a signal there to say, we think we're doing good, but actually we need to do better. It's been amazing, the feedback we've had from people using this. Even though it's actually currently quite a simple, straightforward tool, the feedback already has been mind-blowing. Like their ability to influence leadership all of a sudden, take stats, metrics, data into a leadership team meeting, give some context, build business cases. Yeah, already at a very early stage, it's really empowering people, which is really nice to see. So we hope we can build on that.
Amazing. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes and what outcomes result from it. Just as we wrap up, one thing I like to ask guests is around a piece of advice that you have been given in the past that you still pass on to people now. Do you have any kind of nuggets for us that have kind of stuck with you in your mind that you still share with people?
Interesting one. I've got a few that I try and, mostly advice given to me by my wife about how I could approach things better, do things better, which is sort of helped me in good stead over time. I think for me, one thing I've referenced a few times previously is going with gut, which I know is like a very sort of like overly referenced thing. But I like have been a founder now for 9 years and co-founder as well. So I've not always had to do it on my own, but some of that going out on your own and it can be lonely. You'd have to like, you always got to be the one that making the decisions on stuff and just making a call. And you don't know whether it's going to be right or wrong. And often there's this gut feel of like, you know, you need to do something or should do something, but you maybe don't act on it. And you keep learning afterwards, like, I should have done it. Anyway, that is that, like, go with your gut. It's a weird feeling, but like often your gut feeling is right. And if you need to make a call on something and act quickly and think quickly, just go with your gut. Actually, there's a couple of companies I come across that have that, you know, on their handbooks for employees, very autonomous, very like, there's a company called Whereby on their handbook, they've got an overarching policy. And it's like, if you don't read anything else on the handbook, please read this. And it's like, when it comes to decision-making, do what you think is best for the business. You will not be punished or anything like that, as long as you've just done what you think in your gut is best for the business. I love that stuff. It's just like, especially in the startup space, I'm like big advocate of trying to encourage founders to try and empower teams just to make decisions and screw up, like learn from it. You know, and all that sort of stuff, but just go with your gut, because most of the time it will work out.
Amazing. Really sound advice and a great way to wrap up the conversation. Adam, thank you so much for sharing so openly and for being a guest on the podcast.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
This podcast is powered by Thrive. We're a complete learning and skills platform creating modern learning solutions for modern businesses globally. Check us out.